Hello.
Hello. I'm August.
And I'm Kendra.
And you're listening to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
So this week, in honor of August reading Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado, we are going to be talking about The Girl with the Green Ribbon, the story by Alvin Schwartz from 1984, from a dark, dark...
In a dark, dark room.
In a dark, dark room. I almost said in a dark, dark wood. I was like, that's not it. That amazing short story collection. And in the first story in Carmen Maria Machado's collection is The Husband Stitch, which is a retelling of that story. We'll also be going into the cultural zeitgeist of The Girl with the Green Ribbon, also called The Velvet Ribbon, The Red Ribbon. Many different variations have existed, and we're fascinated by that tale, so we'll be going into it.
Yeah, I am so excited for this one. Reading Her Body and Other Parties, opening with The Husband Stitch, I was just like immediately hooked. I knew I was going to love it because I love her writing. I think that she's so incredibly talented. And this beat all of my expectations. Absolutely love the short story collection, especially the first two, that SVU story. My mind is still blown. I just can't. Like, it's just too damn good. But this was definitely like the right way to start off the short story collection. Gave me major spooky vibes. Was reading it just before Halloween, so perfect time of year. And I'm really excited to learn about the history and context of this story from you, because I know you did some research on background information.
Yes, I did some very academic scholarly research using Wikipedia, who I'm a big fan of.
We love Wiki. Yeah. Okay, but before we jump into talking about these short stories, do you want to tell me what you're reading right now?
I really, really do. Okay, I'm reading Rules of Magic by Alice Hoffman because I just finished Practical Magic. I don't know. I love that fucking movie. And so I've been putting off reading the book for years because I was like, it's not going to be better than the movie. It's just not. Like, that's a 10 out of 10 movie. It wasn't better than the movie. It was really good. And so I'm like on a good Alice Hoffman kick right now. And also, this is Halloween weekend when we're recording it, so I needed some magic.
Very nice. I have never read that book, but I love that movie. So just beautiful. Perfection.
Seriously. What are you reading right now?
Well, I just finished an audiobook for a book that I did not like. And it's Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's a mystery and it's very predictable and it's just not for me.
Book sucks.
Yeah. Apparently there's an alternate ending that Lisa Jewell wanted, which sounds way better than the ending that's in the actual book, but we won't give any spoilers. I just was not a fan of it. If you want a good mystery, don't pick up that one. Go to Gillian Flynn or something else.
I think it's a little, I mean, it's not a good mystery at all, but once I stopped thinking of it as a mystery and saw it as a family drama, I started to really enjoy it. So I gave it like a 2.5 because I was like, There's nothing mysterious about this. But honestly, it was like one of those refreshingly easy books where I was like, I finished this in like two sittings. It was fine.
Yeah, it's what I would call maybe like a background book. Like you have it going while you're cleaning your kitchen and doesn't require too much thought. An enjoyable story, if that's weird to say, because it's about... Yeah. Kidnapping, among other things, but just not my favorite book of the year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that's very fair to say. I think she, well, that's a whole other thing. So let's get into what we want to talk about.
Yes. Green ribbons. Okay. So for background on these, as Kendra said earlier, we're going to be talking about the Alvin Schwartz short story, as well as Carmen Maria Machado's short story. But before we jump into both of those, Kendra did her wonderful Wikipedia research. Do you want to give me some historical context for this green ribbon?
I would really love to. You know, we love historicism around here. New historicism, to clarify. And so the legend of like the ribbons around the neck, maybe, you know, everything, this is all a lot of speculation in the beginning until we get to mid-19th century, so bear with me. But the speculation is around the French Revolution, revolutionaries would wear it around their neck, like a ribbon around their neck tied in a bow in solidarity to those who had been guillotined. as a way of saying like we are all part of this revolution, but then it became a bit campy and like the rich folks who have no taste started doing it at parties and masquerades to mock like the people who have been decapitated, and it kind of just evolved from there. And then in 1824, Washington Irving's story, The Adventure of the German Student, which was like the up until that point the first like popularized real clear narrative about this story. And it's essentially the same formula as The Girl with the Green Ribbon, where there's a girl who has a mysterious ribbon and someone unties it against her will and her head falls off and she's meant to be undead. So it's evolved since there. There are probably hundreds of different versions of it that all follow the same general formula. And then we get Alvin Schwartz's 1984 story, which actually was kind of the first of its kind, where she has autonomy and people respect her wishes, and she is the one who takes the ribbon off to reveal her secret. And then August, do you want to share like what that story actually is about? The Alvin Schwartz?
Oh, well, what are you meaning? What is it actually about? Like the context of the children's story?
Yeah, because it is a bit different. Like it, you know, yeah. Who's in it and stuff, but it's up okay. to you.
Yeah, of course. So The Green Ribbon from In a Dark, Dark Room follows the protagonist, Jenny, who is the girl with the green ribbon, and her meeting of Alfred, who is a man that later becomes her husband, pretty much immediately becomes her husband. This is a very, very short story. I think there's like 3 or 4 pages of it, and most of them are images. So she has this ribbon, and when he first meets her, he asks her why she wears it, and she tells him that she can't tell him. He does not push any further because, again, this is a very short story. We have very limited information. And eventually they get married. He says, now that we're married, you must tell me about the green ribbon. And she continues to say, you must wait. And then very later, Jenny gets sick and she is told that she is dying. And now that she knows that she is going to pass away, she tells Alfred that she can tell him about the green ribbon and tells him that he can untie it and see what she couldn't tell him before. And then when he unties it, her head falls off. So
beautiful.
Yeah. So he still is untying the ribbon, but he's waiting for her consent for this. Mm-hmm. I feel like Carmen Maria Machado's story is very much about consent and also male privilege and entitlement. Mm-hmm. But what are you thinking that the Schwartz story is relating to?
I was actually like really struggling with this. I was like, what is the moral here? Each of the stories has a moral. And I think this one is just respecting people's wishes. As you said, it's super short. There's not like a whole lot of subtext either because it's a children's story. So that's what I thought it was about. I think she was a zombie.
Cool. Love yeah. that. Love some zombies. Yeah, I think, you know, she looks like in the images and neither of them look happy or sad. They're like smiling and stuff. I think it's about like respecting wishes and boundaries within relationships and how if you don't respect those boundaries, a relationship could end because I mean, when her head falls off, she's dead.
100%. And then we really see that show up with Carmen Maria Machado's story.
Yeah. So should we, I know we just briefly were talking about that very, very short children's story, but should we jump into the husband stitch?
Yes. Let's jump in. Well, you recently read it. So what are your like overall initial thoughts?
Ooh, okay. So I read this the first time I read the short story collection, I listened to it via Libby. And then when preparing for this episode, I found a PDF of just this story online. So it is accessible. I would recommend the audiobook was fun, but reading it for the first time was really enjoyable because Carmen Maria Machado, as we see in some of her other stories and in her memoir, is really great at playing with what you're supposed to be doing as a reader, like directing you what you should be doing, like shake a can of pennies or take on like a certain voice for specific characters. So that was a great experience, both listening to that and reading it. I do wish for the audiobook that some of the stuff that they included, like shake a can of pennies or whatever was included in the sound. I think that would have been really fun. But also like she's telling the reader too, not the voice actor. So whatever, would have been cool. I'm sure there's a recording out there or a performance of somebody out there doing that. But this short story, should I just get into what it focuses on?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, or should I go more into my initial response?
I think maybe giving a summary would be good because it's very different
than yeah.
the original okay. one.
So in this story, it's different from the short story. Both characters do not have any names. So our unnamed female protagonist has this green ribbon, and we get a lot of her coming of age. So we see that this ribbon is something that she's had for her entire life. It's around her neck, and she meets the man who will later become her husband when she's young. I believe she's a teenager. And he's continuously asking about the ribbon, and he's continuously trying to untie it when she's not paying attention. Specifically, like, it seems like it's pretty much always after they have sex. I mean, they do have like very consensual and open sex throughout their relationship. It's just the boundary that he's crossing is trying to untie the ribbon, and he's not understanding why she doesn't want him to untie that. And so they go through their whole lives. They have these, are we including spoilers? I guess we are. This is just a spoiler-filled episode.
Yeah, it's a short story too.
Yeah.
So
okay. We'll just put spoilers in the comment. Whatever. So they go through their lives together. They have children. I believe they have a son who also is interested in untying the green ribbon. And, you know, he grows up. Her and her husband are now empty nesters. And he is continuously asking throughout this relationship to untie the ribbon. And by the end of the story, it seems like she kind of succumbs to that. And we don't, there's no ending to the story. We don't know what happens once the ribbon is untied.
Yeah, I think we can, you know, make our own assumptions. Mine personally is that she dies, but who knows? Maybe he carries around her head, or maybe he keeps her secret for her. We have no idea.
So like a legend of Sleepy Hollow, the Headless Horseman or something?
That's her? What I would hope, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could, because Machado throughout this story is including other like famous children's, mostly children's short stories and like horror stories that I think you and I both really recognize, like growing up with, like the inclusion of the story of the person that's escaped prison and has the hook hand.
Yes.
And will like ride it on or have it go against couples' cars and like oh my God, what, lover's lanes?
Yes.
I was like, make out lanes? No, lover's lanes, like that. And then trying to think of some of the other short stories that are included.
Well, I mean, intertextuality is like massive here. Do you know what the first reference is?
What?
You're not, it's okay. No. The first line in the story is "in the beginning," and that's from the Bible.
Okay.
Which I think is interesting because that's like the first children's story many people are given that sets the context for like how we're told relationships should be, right? And so I thought that was like a really cool choice. And then I don't know, I love those biblical references, especially when they're like kind of turned on their head.
Yeah, I did not even recognize that. I was focusing on like the inclusion of like myth and folklore throughout. Yeah. And now I'm like, of course, completely blanking except for the hook hand one, but there's other horror short stories included.
There's so many, and all of them surround like being believed. Mm-hmm. And being like heard, like the one, like you said, with the hook hand is when they're sitting in the car and like she's like masturbating in front of him. Mm-hmm. And she has this sudden like memory of that tale of like, and then it's like the girlfriend saying, I think there's someone out there, and the guy going, no, we're fine, let's keep having sex. And she's like, we just went on without even a care of what was out there. So a lot of references to like no one being really heard,
or like believed.
Believed, like the Cassandra complex is massive here, as well as like a huge emphasis on consent
and different forms of consent as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think one way that that's really shown is something that I thought was really cool, and I really appreciated when I was rereading this story, I'm picking up more information on that, was it seems like most, if not all, women in this story have some sort of ribbon tied around different parts of their body. So there is the nude portrait model who has the ribbon tied around her ankle. Mm-hmm. And the primary character, our protagonist, like becomes obsessed with her until her husband expressed interest. And then she's like, feels like she has to stay away. But there's all these different women carrying around these different ribbons that they're for themselves. They're not for other people to know about. And people, it seems like, are continuously pressuring people to find out what their ribbons mean.
Definitely. I thought that was a really cool inclusion too. So when I first read this story, like five or six years ago, when the book first came out, I thought the ribbon represented like sexual trauma, which I don't think that at all anymore. But that was just like my first reading, because trigger warning, she like shares as a child, she was molested. And so when she was like talking to other women and like talking about shared experiences of being abused by men in very different ways, like I was like, oh, maybe that's what it represents. But now reading it, I think it's more that like each individual person, but especially like femme people in a patriarchal society, have a right to own, like, to things that are secretly in their own, and they don't have to, like, they don't have to share that with the world. There's no reason for them to open certain parts of themselves up to others.
Yeah, I had, that's was my interpretation of the ribbons. I think after seeing them on like so many other mostly like female identifying characters, made me think about how there's parts of everybody's identities that they choose to keep for themselves and to not share with others. Specifically, I feel like a lot of female identifying people, you know, like there are experiences that you feel like you don't have to share, and you're totally able to do that. Like your experiences are valid and you should share when you're able to and when you want to. But I mean, this is true for all people, even not femme identifying people, but having parts of your identity that you keep for yourselves, like not because you're necessarily like ashamed or embarrassed of them, but just to have something that's uniquely yours and to yourself. And I don't know, that's how I viewed these ribbons here. Like, you're not entitled to this information about me. Like, yes, it's on my body and visible, but that doesn't mean that you're entitled to access.
Yes, I love the use of access there, because like watching the relationship between the wife and the husband, which other than the him not respecting the ribbon boundary, seems, well, up until the birth, we'll get to that, but up until then, seems consensual, healthy, mutually desirous. However, that concept of access, when you see it explored in a heteronormative, like typical patriarchal study, like so many different words I could apply to this marriage, family structure, is that the husband has 100% access to the wife, right? That she's like, quote unquote, his property, which we don't agree with, of course, obviously. And so that, I think, is his obsession with it, is that she is asserting this agency and this independence by saying, I love you, I love our relationship, but you don't have the right to every part of me, and that's okay, that needs to be okay. And we see as the story evolves that he tries to like reclaim power over her in like small ways. And it's, do we want to get to the stitch?
Yeah, so we'll get into that in a second. But just another thing that I really appreciated about this story was this husband character. Like, he is ultimately a villain, but she portrays him, and especially at the beginning of the story, as you were saying, as somebody who's in this relationship where there is a great deal of mutual respect and respect for boundaries of one another, except for the green ribbon. And so it's nice having like this complex villain character that we once perceived as good and kind of seen the downfall of that relationship. And I think we also see that in the depiction of her son as well, and as he's growing older.
Yes, I would love to talk about the son pretty soon, but I don't, should we talk about the son now as the character, or should we do the birth?
Let's talk about the birth first. What came first, the birth or the son?
Talk about the Bible. Okay. So the husband, Stitch, which until I read this story for the first time, I hadn't heard of before. So that was upsetting for me to Google. but for those who have not heard of it, because I would hope that most people would never have to encounter this in their life, unfortunately many do. So the husband, Stitch, it's when a woman is cut open when she's about to give birth. Down there between, like, you know, the little part between your anus and your vagina, in order to get the baby to come out more smoothly.
It's called the taint.
Thank you. I did not know that. I was like, in my head, I always called it the gooch. So
just a little sidetrack. My mom this summer asked me if I knew what a taint was because she was playing Cards Against Humanity with some of her friends. And she did not know and had to look it up. And then I had to tell her I know what it was. Not that the taint is bad, but just an interesting conversation to have with one's mother.
Yeah, I'm just picturing getting cut down there is making me squirm. That's the horror part for me. So when some people give birth, they have to be cut open in order for the baby to come out more smoothly. And that's actually like a very normal practice. That's not what should be upsetting about this. And then they get restitched up. So there's this concept of the husband stitch, where while the woman is under, the doctor and the husband in the story can joke about like, oh, can you make it a little tighter for me? Because the idea is that it should be for his enjoyment, not for her comfort. And so they add an extra stitch so that she's tighter. And you should be incredibly upset as August and I are like making these faces. We don't have words, because that's just like so disgusting and violating and just.
And also like she just gave birth, like in any situation for any person involved in this, like the primary focus of your physician and your partner who's there, if your partner is there, should not be on their future pleasure, should be on your well-being and that baby's well-being, and also your comfort, because you just gave birth to a fucking little monster. Like, I'm sorry, that's like how many pounds coming out of your body? No, thank you. Not the focus right now. Just so gross and misogynistic and ugh.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in that vulnerable of a state where you feel like you don't have control over your body already, and the two people in the room you're supposed to trust the most take advantage of you in that way. Like, that's horrifying. So it's already a horror story just imagining that. And then we see that essentially what happens is the wife gives birth, she's in and out of consciousness, and they basically joke about adding an extra stitch in there to tighten her up.
Gross. Again, not respecting her boundaries. Of course, like, she was out of it. She has no ability to give consent in this moment for something like that to happen. This is also something that I don't, from how the story presents it, makes it seem like it's never like a verified thing that's actually done in the real world. But I'm sure, like, having heard of this before and just like in context of stories, not an actual experience, like, I'm sure this does happen. And it's just really repulsive that people, again, are focusing on other people's pleasure when somebody's already in such a vulnerable state. It's just really invasive and gross.
Yeah. And I know this is probably not neither here. I don't know if this is super relevant, but like, it already takes a long time for people to recover from birth in order to feel comfortable and enjoy sex. And so why would you, it's another thing for them. I'm so upset by it. I'm having trouble having words. It's just like, why would you make that healing process even tougher for them? Why would you like make it possibly more uncomfortable for them? Like, ask every person with a vagina the first time you have sex, it's painful, and that's okay. Like, it's okay if you're okay with it, because that's what happens. And so I'm imagining it's going to be painful again for a long time for that person who has the extra stitch.
And like, if somebody went into this and was like, yeah, I would like that, please, like, that's something that I'm interested in, like, more power to you, whatever you want with your body. But like, the fact that someone else is making this decision for them is really gross to me. And also, again, like what you were saying, like, it's hard to recover. Things aren't going to be as pleasurable for a while. Why should your partner be put in a position where they're still going to be able to like be satisfied in that way, when you're going to be like incredibly uncomfortable for a while? It just seems, again, rooted in misogyny and really unfair.
I think an interesting point she makes after, you know, while she's recovering, is that she realizes for the first time that she can like pleasure him and get no pleasure from it, which I think to me revealed two things. One, obviously, like, that she had been very like satisfied her whole relationship, and that was almost like an empowering realization at the same time, where she was like, oh, well, like, not in that context, but it was more like, oh, I thought like sex was we both get pleasured as it should be. And then also the sad realization where she was all like, he no longer cares that I'm comfortable and satisfied. And now it's more about his comfort and satisfaction.
Yeah, definitely that. Also, again, just going back to this, like, your partner just had a baby. Like, let's let them relax and recover for a while. Not to say that like sex does not happen after having a child, but God, just like give her a minute. Like, let her be. Is sex your top priority right now? Like, yes, of course, sex is very important to relationships, and it's shown to be very important to this relationship in particular. But like, care for your partner. Have some respect for your partner. Talk about that beforehand.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Should we talk about the son?
Yeah. Okay. Oh boy.
So she has a son, which reveals, like, when she's first told that she is a boy, she starts sobbing. And at first I was like, oh, she wanted a girl. Like, she didn't want more men in this world. That's what I thought. But then we realize that she's relieved when she talks to other mothers, and they're like, they're both like, she's thinking like, oh, thank God I don't have to deal with the particular challenges that come from having a girl child in this world. And I think what she means by that is that, not that, you know, girl children are difficult, but that they unfortunately experience a lot of trauma in this world. And so, especially when you think back about her history with sexual trauma, I think that was a fear she was having.
Yeah. And another thing about when she was pregnant, her husband asked her, oh, if we have a girl, is she going to be born with a ribbon too? Like already thinking about like this trauma that's attached, I don't know if it's necessarily trauma always for the green ribbon, but like the secret part of oneself that they feel like they have to keep to themselves, which again, it's totally okay. Like if you want to keep parts of yourself to yourself, fine. Like it's your life, you live it. Like him asking that already before she has even like given birth just seemed really invasive. And then later, like we see with the nude model, she has a daughter. And she's talking about that experience and just like comparing like motherhood and how it's different depending on what gender of child you're raising was really interesting. I think that it was explored very well here.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then we get to watch this son grow up and be very much like his father. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it was interesting, like showing him as a kid, like he would like unknowingly go for the green ribbon because like he's a kid, like he doesn't fully understand what it means. And he would respect that boundary when he was a child. But then as he grows older, feeling entitled to know everything about his mother and like also asking about the green ribbon, like what you were saying, it's just a repeat of his father.
Yeah. And I thought that was a really interesting dynamic because I think obviously him being like a male child, that's its own cultural comment. But also I think just universally, there's like a lot of children feel entitled to like knowing their parents. And I think a lot of times parents are often no longer seen as people once they're parents. They're just like their parents or their extensions of their children. And so that's what was bringing up to me, as well as him like obviously mimicking the behavior he witnesses at home from his father.
Yeah. It was, again, like how she portrayed the man who would later become her husband throughout the story, showing like these moments of like innocence and happiness. And then that transition to invasiveness and entitlement was jarring, but I feel like also like pretty realistic to, I would say, like the female experience or female identifying experience. Like, it's just gross all around.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's what we should title the episode, Gross All Around.
But In a Dark, Dark Room is not gross all around. No. Very spooky, though.
It's kind of like cozy spooky, you know? Mm-hmm. Where everything is safe about it.
It's not as scary as Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, that's for sure.
Yeah. Back to, like, the stories that are mentioned, all of the morals around them are surrounding, like, how women should behave or how they shouldn't complain, or it's a lot of representations of them being hysterical. Like the first one we hear, other than the Bible, is that it's a story of the kinds of things like a girl or a woman wants from her partner sexually, and she's demonized because of it. Like it's like the partner calls her mom and like they run her out of town. And so the moral is like, you are supposed to want certain things out of your relationships and you're not supposed to advertise it, and that's supposed to set the tone for the for the story. And then you see the character just completely go, I don't give a fuck about that, I want what I want. And I'm August is cheering. I loved it.
Yeah, something that I really liked about this story as well is it's all from her perspective. So we never have the son's perspective. We never have, thank God, we never have the husband's perspective. And I feel like that made this story so much more fun. It's weird saying fun because it is very dark and it is very rooted in actual like femme identifying trauma. So fun in that context. But definitely like her just completely disregarding like all these misogynistic and patriarchal ideas that come from these stories that are so ingrained in us as children. I felt like that was just so refreshing to see, like the hook one and her being like, why the fuck would I care about some hook hand guy when I could be hanging out in this car having a grand old time? I'm like, good for you, girl. Be safe, but also get what you want.
I totally agree. I think my favorite quote of the entire story, I'm going to misquote it, but it's, I've heard the rumors of girls who behave like this and I was unafraid to make more. And I was like, yes, bitch, make more. It was really, a lot of the story was very empowering, and you think it's going to be this like, oh, this really like sexually freeing story about a consensual, respectful relationship. And as you said, it just like slowly declines. And I think that's what's horrifying about it, is like it happens in small bits until it's like, it kills her essentially, or it kills the relationship.
Yeah, definitely. I think showing how you know, relationships change over time, especially when there's not that mutual respect there from the beginning for all parts of somebody's identity or what they want for their life, just showing how that can like kind of spiral downwards into unhappiness. And as we see here, probably death, because at the end of the story, her ribbon is removed by her husband and it ends there. We don't know what happens to her or her spouse or her son.
Yeah, I'll also say one of the stories is about the woman who puts on the wedding dress and it kills her because it was embalmed and it was poisoned. And I felt like that was I was like, oh, Carmen Maria Machado coming through to say marriage is just poisoning you. It was an omen. I thought that was really funny.
Was there also, I could be mixing up from like one of the other books that I'm reading right now. Isn't there also a story of a bride who is playing hide and seek with her partner and goes and hides in a chest and gets locked in the chest and they don't find her till years later?
Yes. And then she literally says, like, nothing good happens to brides. The stories always sense the happiness and have to like snuff it out. And so I was like, girl, listen to your own mind.
Wow. Yeah. Just made me think, I recently watched that movie, Hide and Seek, which coincides with that really well. It's an interesting movie.
Yes, definitely. Good for Halloween.
So another thing about this story is it's similar in Schwartz's story. The ribbon is never explained to us. We're never like given concrete details on what it means for these people. Of course, like in Machado's story, it's expanded because we see multiple FM identifying people wearing these ribbons. But in Schwartz's short story, we only see Jenny. I really like this. I'll reread it every Halloween, I think.
It's beautifully written. Like, all, I mean, we've said this at once. We've said it a million times. Machado is just a brilliant, brilliant writer. And I would also recommend a story that gives me similar vibes by her called Her Body Herself, which is also about like having rights to your own body and your own secrets and your own selfhood. And it's really good.
Is that one in Her Body and Other Parties?
No, which is confusing, right?
Yeah. I was about to be like, I listened to it, but I don't remember that title at all.
I mean, maybe I'm like second guessing myself. I don't think it is. It's a really short story. I think I sent you a Google Doc of it a few weeks back, but I'll send it again. There's a PDF of it online. It's really short, and I think it's one of her earlier stories.
Nice. Yeah. And when I was looking online, it was really easy to find the husband stitch as a PDF. It was very accessible. I think it's even on her. There was like some website that was like dedicated to her or had like a big author's page, which was so nice to see because I'm like, she deserves all the praise, all the love. We love Carmen Maria Machado. But I think her other stories are pretty easy to find as well. It seems like she's very much interested in like access and people being able to read her stories and enjoy her stories. So it's just great to see.
We love her. Speculative fiction queen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone go read this. Everyone go read In the Dream House. I always want to call it In the Dollhouse, but this is not Ibsen.
I need to read that soon. Maybe I'll read it next.
Highly recommend. That one is just as intertextual and fun.
Mm-hmm. So. All right.
Nice. Well, I'm glad that we talked about this story. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. We kind of want to do something like this more often, taking on like retellings of stories, especially kind of iconic stories that we all have heard from childhood or just in general in life. So let us know if that's something that you would be interested in. You can let us know by reaching out to us on Instagram. Our Instagram is BookDumbPodcast. You can also reach out to us individually on Instagram. You can find me, August, at Iggy Poop.
And me, Kendra, at Kendra Lapp. You also, wherever you're listening, please follow or subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. So if you leave us a 5-star review, that would be fantastic. But of course, we want your honest opinion and you can always give us feedback. We have already incorporated some excellent feedback from you all. Obviously on Spotify, you can't leave reviews, but please do follow so that we show up in your feed every week. And thank you so, so much for listening.
Yeah, we hope that you're having a great day. Bye.